Packers fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Ryan and Tom here at Lambeau Field. Guys, first preseason game out of the way. Jordan Love got the start. A lot of rookies got some time. Bubble guys got a lot of time. But that's not even the biggest news of today, I would say. Matt LaFleur, head coach, announced today that the Packers got three guys back off the PUP. Elgton Jenkins, Robert Tonyan, and Christian Watson. Those are all guys that are going to contribute a lot towards this offense. So, Ryan, I'm just going to start with you. With those three guys, just what does it mean to have them back? They didn't do any team today, just indeed, but just to have them back on the field.
Well, it's big for each of those guys, but two of those three we know are going to contribute a lot on offense. We Christian Watson's on a different track because he's a rookie. He's missed the first 2 weeks of his camp. He's at a position that historically has quite the curb from college to the NFL. He hasn't had any reps with Aaron Rodgers. All those things, you know, that for him, that's a delay in the short term for his ability to contribute to this offense. So we don't know, but Elgton Jenkins and Robert Tonyan, they've played at or near Pro Bowl levels in their career. They're veteran guys, and they're a month away from week one. I mean, they have a whole month before September 11th in Minnesota. They've got a good chance of being able to play week one, and they've got other hurdles that they've got to clear. No, they haven't taken team reps today. I asked Robert Tonyan, did you do anything today that was new? He said, no. I mean, the blocking drills, the routes, you know, he's going against a bigger body, but he's done all this. So you know, this was a good first step for them to get back. They still have to get into team. Matt LaFleur said he wouldn't hold your breath on those guys, any of those three, playing in the preseason, which is more significant for Christian Watson than it is for Elgton Jenkins and Robert Tonyan. But even with the hurdles still to clear, a month out, Spoon, I think there's a really good chance you're going to see those guys week one.
I would think so. I would think Jenkins will play. You know, a month is probably the timeline. It could be a little more than that, but obviously by taking them off PUP right now means they expect them to play within the first 4 weeks of the season. And he didn't rule out them being ready for week one. So, yeah, I think they'll both be ready. You never know what could happen. They're not going to play in a preseason game, but most of those guys, once they feel good about their knees and feel like they've had some padded practices, then I'll be okay. So, yeah, I would expect both of them to start. And Christian Watson, I think he'll probably play. I think he'll be ready he had the least of the injury. I mean, the lesser of the injury. And he just probably relies on the speed factor the most. But I think he'll be ready, too.
Here's what we do know, Cassidy, is that all three of those guys are going to be on the 53. Mm-hmm. And so they're not saving three spots on PUP on their 53. I mean, cuts got harder today because those three guys are, whether week one or not, they're going to be on the 53.
That's a very good point because we had talked about Samori Toure or Danny Davis maybe taking one of those receiver spots while Christian Watson was on PUP and having those first 4 weeks. That changed drastically today.
Well, no, because those guys weren't going to make it ahead of Christian Watson.
Not ahead of him, well, but just
PUP,
getting
though,
that spot while he's on PUP.
If he's on PUP, that's an extra spot potential.
Right.
Yeah, but I didn't think he was going to be on PUP just because his knee injury was just like a cleanup.
I think it's more significant at the numbers, offensive line and tight end. I mean, there's a lot of
that's
developmental
tight end guys.
Where, you know, someone that was going to make a spot there, probably not making one now. And you can say the same thing for offensive line. There's a lot of bodies always at offensive line. Someone who's going to make a spot there, probably not making one now.
The biggest news I thought
Spoon's
I got
trying to
out
decide
of it.
How much to rag on us for saying this.
Yeah.
I can see it in his
no,
face.
No. The biggest news to me was that Bakhtiari wasn't cleared.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I saw him doing stuff that Elgton Jenkins was doing recently. So he must be getting close, but it still remains just a mystery as to when he'll be ready, how ready he'll be, and how he'll be able to sustain it. So the fact that Elgton Jenkins is back, you know,
short of 9 months.
Short of 9 months is
incredible.
Is incredible. And the fact that Bakhtiari isn't is noteworthy to me. I mean, I am not ruling them out, but, you know, the clock is ticking.
Elgton Jenkins said I asked him when he kind of knew he'd be back. He said 2 weeks ago his knee felt fine. Mm-hmm. And they just wanted to get him as close to that nine-month mark, because ACLs historically are 9 to 12 months. The medical staff just wanted to get him as close to 9 months as possible. He said 2 weeks ago, no pain in the knee, no stiffness, felt just fine. That's basically 8 months after surgery. I mean, that doesn't happen. Yeah. You don't hear that happening.
I wrote that there's almost no way they would do him before 10 months, because that's been Patrick McKenzie's MO. But then again, you know, Elgton Jenkins is kind of a special athlete who, you know, probably has much better ligaments than the average person, you know? And so
he's a freak.
What a qualifier.
Elgton Jenkins is a freak. He plays all five offensive line positions at a high level.
They used to say that about Favre too. Like, the guy has, you know, super ligaments, you know, like he never tore an ACL. He tore his PCL and he's ready to go in 2 weeks. So Elgton Jenkins is just built, you know, we're ready to play. And David Bakhtiari has, you know, he's older and has some other concerns.
I covered a guy at Florida that now plays for the Giants, Kadarius Toney, and we used to say he has no tendons. He had no ligaments, because he could cut and just be like parallel to the ground. It was freaky.
I will say that there are guys they've hurried, and, you know, history shows that they re-injure themselves, you know, if you just don't let it heal. And I sort of wonder about that with Bakhtiari. Like, you know, he tried to come back, you know, he pushed it, then he had some other issues. So the big thing is for Elgton Jenkins and for Tanyan is avoiding the other issues.
I think the big question for both of those when it comes to week one is location. For Elgton Jenkins, it's literally going back to the scene of the injury. I mean, he tore his ACL November 21st last year at Minnesota. And for Robert Tonyan, it was October 28th and it was at Arizona. But what do those two fields have in common? Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, to me, the big question is playing surface. I mean, you want your first game out to be on synthetic turf after you both your
good
ACLs
point.
Got torn
good point.
On synthetic
do
turf.
Do they hold
good
both point. Those guys out on the opener?
Yeah.
That might be worth maybe. Asking Matt LaFleur if they want to risk it week one.
Well, I asked Elgton Jenkins that question today if there's any concern about the turf. He said, no, if you're out there, you're out there. Like, so, but, you know, what's he going to say? I mean, yeah, good point. Week two.
Yeah, but if it's your very first game and, you know, you're worried about, okay, how's it going to react? Will there be swelling? You know, things like that. I don't know. That's a good point. They could wait. So
it'll be interesting.
I asked Christian Watson and Robert Tonyan, do you need to get hit before you feel comfortable? Christian Watson, I thought, came back with a great answer. He said, well, my number one goal is to not get hit at all. Robert Tonyan said, yeah, I need to get hit one time just to know that I'm okay. I said, is there anyone on this defense you don't want to be the first person to hit you? He didn't hesitate a second. He said, Rashawn Gary. I don't want him being the one to hit me.
Yeah, so, well, Amari Rodgers found out about that.
He sure did.
And that's what Tonyan brought up. I said, because now we know Rashawn Gary can knock a guy to the ground flat-footed. And he was like, that was incredible, wasn't it? Like it.
I've never
it was
seen
something.
That. Hardest hit I've ever seen on the sideline.
Yeah, yeah. Amari Rodgers lost that battle. And he said he talked about it today and basically said he was celebrating running up and then bam. So
that sobered you up real quick.
That's a great transition. Let's talk about Friday night in San Francisco versus the 49ers. Ryan, you said it best after the game. Final score doesn't matter. It's the preseason. It's all about what the guys do. Amari Rodgers in particular, I thought, really sort of helped his case arguably some of more than anyone else on that offense. Not only with what he was able to do at receiver, he scored a touchdown that looked very much Amari Rodgers at Clemson-esque, but a 50-yard return where he had good vision, he had good speed, he had good cuts. Hardest he got touched was by Rashawn Gary on the sideline. Spoon, I'm going to start with you. Is that what they need to see from him to trust him at returner, more like that?
Well, when asked about it, LaFleur immediately went to the mistakes that he made, the mental mistakes. And that's what, you know, they love to see the 50-yard return. He made something out of nothing after getting clobbered going up the middle the first time. He pointed that out. He said, it was a middle return. He tried to go up the middle, got clobbered, said, I'm not going back up the middle again. And he bounced it outside and it was great. And yeah, he scored, but you know, he got, on the third interception, he just got knocked off his route and then couldn't recover and ran a bad route that led to an interception. That can't happen. You know, that just can't happen on a clutch, you know, key situation there. So, yeah, he has a lot of stuff. I think his route running has to continue to improve. But, you know, if they can get him the ball in space, then, yeah, he did show a little bit of that.
So, Ryan, that's Amari the returner. Take us through Amari the receiver. What did you see from him on Friday?
To Spoon's point, I think that athletically he looked like a different guy. But when it came to the mental part of the game, he looked like the same guy. And, you know, I thought it was good of Matt LaFleur to say today that even though Amari Rodgers ran the wrong route, he was supposed to pull that against too high in front of the DB and clear his face instead of getting sucked underneath and not giving his quarterback a really chance to make a play. I thought it was good that Matt LaFleur said that, yeah, at the same time, that ball doesn't need to be thrown there. Because even there's a difference. An incompletion, a punt, is an okay play. I think that was something for Jordan Love to maybe learn. And a lot of the stuff going on around Jordan Love was not on him. That one, you live to fight another day. Don't throw the ball there. Have an incompletion. With that said, Amari Rodgers, you got to clear the face. You cannot run that route and bend that route behind the DB. You've got to help your quarterback. So really, I mean, on all three, of the three picks, I say half was on Jordan Love. The other two, what are you going to do there?
Yeah, I can't blame him for the Tyler Davis. You know, he put a little bit too much sauce on it, but so what? The guy still has to catch it.
You're a pro tight end.
And
I talked about yesterday.
And the Dubs one is all on Dubs. I mean, that was he put it where it should be, you know, where the corner couldn't get it. And the corner just ripped it out of his hand.
Can't happen.
No.
Pro receiver cannot let a DB wrestle the ball away from him on the way to the ground. And mm-hmm. You know, Romeo Dobbs had some good learning moments for his first game. You know, he showed what everyone has seen, a splash play to start the day, and mm-hmm. then he showed what no one has seen, which was kind of shaky hands. I mean, that's, to me, been the most impressive thing was how consistently – strong and yet soft his hands were. I mean, he plucks the football. He's a natural hands catcher. I was shocked when he dropped that one near the left sideline.
Yeah, the crosser. I think he was trying to run with it, mm-hmm. thinking about getting hit. You try to judge what happens in the grand scheme of things instead of one play. But, you know, because in practice he's held on to a lot of
everything.
It, you know. So we'll see. First game, jitters, stuff like that. But
I thought it was interesting, Ryan, you asked Romeo Dobbs today, Sunday, we're recording this on Sunday, were there first game jitters? And he said no. But then a couple minutes later, he said, you know, you get a little nerves with your first game. So do you think there were some? He just didn't really want to.
Yeah, he said that after the first drive, it slowed down. Mm-hmm. But I think, to Spoon's point, it did look like he was trying to run before he had the ball on that crosser. And I think that's where, for a rookie who's never really played again, I mean, what you get at training camp from an NFL speed standpoint, it's not the same as when it's live. It's another level. Even in the preseason, it's another level, and then it goes to another level in the regular season. But for a guy who's never experienced that before, there's a feel that rookies have to acquire, and you know, it does go quicker. I don't know if that's even so much as this jitters and nerves as a guy that's never played at that speed before, mm-hmm. and now is being asked to take a layup at a speed he's never. That's going to happen. So no, his hands have been so good in camp. I don't think that's an issue. I think that's just a rookie that's adjusting to new speed.
I really want to see him against Tyrann Mathieu this week and the joint practices, because we've seen him against Jair. We've seen him take some lumps and then hold his own as well against Jair, Eric Stokes, Rasul Douglas. But Tyrann Mathieu, arguably as well as any corner in the league other than maybe Jalen Ramsey, really uses trash talk to his advantage and can get under your skin, will go on Instagram, learn your mother's name before he gets out there against you. And Romeo Dobbs, I'm pretty sure his heartbeat is like boop, boop, boop. Like he doesn't get flustered. I want to see if he gets flustered.
I don't see him getting flustered. Dude's from South L.A.
That's a very good point.
I mean, I don't think the trash talk's going to shake him all that much.
I don't know enough about him. I guess that'll be. I mean, I don't know if Tyrann Mathieu's going to be actually be on him. You know, one on one at any situation. But yeah, he might be doing the trash talk. The guy I continue to be impressed with, and I've watched him a lot in practice, is Danny Davis. Mm-hmm. The guy catches everything, and that was his MO in Madison. He just caught everything. And to come out and then, you know, in the late second quarter, and then all of a sudden, you know, Jordan Love throws you a ball that isn't that great, and you pluck it and get a first down, and then you he throws you another back shoulder that isn't that great, and you catch and you score a touchdown off it. That's what you're looking for in a preseason game. You're looking. That's how guys make teams, is doing something like that.
So we're at that 33-yard touchdown was pretty much all a catch and run. I mean, a lot of that.
Oh, and the adjustment was out of this world.
It was a great adjustment. Where would you have put that ball given the covers? Because the cover's over the top, and I thought Jordan Love.
Well, Love said he put it too far to the inside. Okay. You know, if Davis doesn't really get inside. I mean, Davis made a great adjustment. Mm-hmm. I think usually that ball is, you know, if you're the corner, that ball is just thrown right here. Mm-hmm. And it was way out here. So, you know, I mean, it was still a good, it's funny because Love said, yeah, I that wasn't a very good throw and it was too far inside. And Davis is like, it was a great throw.
I thought so, it was okay, you know, really. I mean, maybe closer to the sideline, but I thought it was okay.
I told him what Love said, and he said, no, it was a great throw. He said, he's just saying that. And but I did think it was a little too far inside. Either way, Danny Davis did what you have to do to impress somebody. And so now he has to continue to pick it up, and he's got to show he can block.
Let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. We saw a lot of rotation at safety as they try to find that 3-4-5 spot. But Dallin Leavitt left the game with an injury. LaFleur said today, Sunday, that, you know, it shouldn't be anything too long term.
No, he did say it was long. Or he said it was going to be a while before he's out. That looked really bad. When I saw it,
separated shoulders, what it looked like.
Well, at first I was like, it looked like to me like he broke his upper arm. And then, you know, but he was able to at least do that. So, yeah, it's a shoulder injury, and it's pretty significant, I'm sure.
It looked a bit like the Jair Alexander on Najee Harris.
Yeah. You
know, and that was a long time.
It all depends. You know, how bad was everything stretched? And
structural, yeah.
But while he wasn't very good in coverage, he played on all four as a starter on all four special teams. And now they got to find a new personal protector and punt. And they got to – I mean, he was probably going to be a special teams captain, you know.
And he was their most experienced third safety behind Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage. Now, Vernon Scott's been ahead of him.
Yeah.
But, he's played. He has actually played.
He's played in the slot. He's been a slot guy in the dime. So he can do that.
My apologies. I was thinking of LaFleur saying nothing long-term for anyone else. Like Tebow that, or anyone else that was sort of banged up. You are correct. He did say it would be a while for Dallin Leavitt. That being said, because of what they wanted him to do on special teams, which is why he was brought in, do you think they find a way to keep him in town, just depending on, or do they wait to see how long this injury is going to be and then make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, they got a month. I don't know. If they put him on IR, he's done for the year.
Right.
If they... You know, that's the only thing they can do at this point other than carry him on the 53 and hope he is ready to play in time or early in the season. So that's one of those decisions they're going to have to make.
If you put him on the 53, then you can IR him and designate him.
He's on the 53, yeah.
So it just loses a spot for the cutdown day. But if you think that he can be back, that's an option if you think he's going to be back at some
point. Yeah, the question is how long is he going to be out, and that's we don't know.
General Manager Brian Gutekunst will meet with the media on Thursday, so that's definitely a question to ask him, just sort of what is his thinking there, how does he want to balance that.
I'm sure he'll answer that with great specificity.
I'm sure he'll say.
Tell us everything.
Maybe even give us his 53.
He'll say, we'll see. We'll see what it brings to us. Other safety spots. As you said, Vernon Scott is who was running today out there in place of Darnell Savage. Do we see him kind of locking up that third spot? more and more.
It's early, but he's clearly the front runner right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think he's locked it up. That's a big statement, but he's clearly the front runner.
Yeah, it's his to win. Sean Davis has gotten a lot of nice play. I mean, he's gotten a lot of play time, but Vernon Scott's MO is making plays and being around the line of scrimmage, and he's tall and rangy, and so, I mean, it's up to him to win that spot.
You know, Vernon Scott and Sean Davis are almost they complement each other almost kind of like Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage do. I mean, you got Vernon Scott, who plays all over. He's kind of the Swiss Army knife by the line of scrimmage, like you said. And then Sean Davis, he's got a lot of speed. He can cover the back end. I know Darnell Savage, that's an area of his game that he needs to grow in from last year, is covering the back end. But that's what, you know, he's been more of that rangy safety where, and you need depth at both of those type of spots. So I think both are making the 53, and then it's almost what do they need if someone goes down?
Yeah, the question to me is, who is really a deep safety? Is Sean Davis good enough to be a deep safety? Because I'm not sure that Vernon Scott is. Amos isn't. I mean, he can play, and he does play the deep safety, but you'd really like to have a guy with some speed. So if something happens to Darnell Savage, and he has had some injury issues, who's their deep safety? I don't know right now. I mean, I honestly think that Rasul Douglas could step in and play safety anytime.
But we just haven't seen it, though. I wonder, he's built that way, but we just haven't, you know, that transition is still.
I think he can do whatever he wants. It's just, you know, he's such a smart player. It just, yeah, some of the techniques and things, but I don't think it would take him long to adjust if he had to play safety.
Wrapping up the defense, we've kind of felt throughout training camp that this defensive line could be really deep. Having seen it in action on Friday, is that a safe bet to take?
My boy Jack Heflin,
yes, you're coming through. Your man crush.
You know what? Yes, last year I was all over him, and this year I was kind of writing him off because of, you know, Wyatt and Slayton and Ford and you know, even in the story I wrote, I just kind of mentioned him in a highlight, and then he comes out and he just destroys San Francisco's right guard and had a really nice game. So shame on me.
He told me that the whole time he was thinking, I'll show you, Spoon.
Yeah.
I'll show you.
Probably. I got off his bandwagon too fast.
You know, how about, like, I thought Chris Slayton.
He showed out, right?
Yes, he might just be a practice squad guy, but he had a heck of a game. He had a lot of good bursts off the line.
If you told me a week ago, Chris Slayton, I would have said that's just a camp body.
Yeah.
He had a really good game.
He sure did.
That's how deep this defensive line is that you're seeing Jack Heflin's and Chris Slayton's make plays.
Right. Yeah, and to me, that's always a sign of a good team is when their second stringers beat the other team's second stringers in certain areas. That means you have depth and you have quality depth. And if you have quality depth at the defensive line, that's pretty good. That's a good area to have quality depth.
There's a lot that you can kind of bypass with things that Urban Meyer says, but one thing he did say that has always stuck with me is you build a team around your defensive line. He said everybody wants the quarterback, everybody wants receivers, everybody wants corners, but you build a team around your defensive line.
It starts up front, Cassidy.
In the trenches.
It starts up front.
Mike McCarthy used to say it's the middle, you know. Mm-hmm. So you need to have a nose tackle, you need to have a good safety, you need to have an inside linebacker, quarterback, you know, and
closer
a running
to the
back.
Ball.
So that is legitimate. You have a good center, good nose tackle, that's pretty good. Yeah. And a quarterback
that
helps
line,
too.
You know, like you picture that line, like I guess especially if they're like an I, who is your running back, who's your quarterback, who's your center,
mm-hmm.
who's your nose tackle, who's
exactly.
your middle linebacker, who's your deep safety.
Yeah. And the Packers are in pretty good shape in all of those positions. You know, Josh Myers is the one who still has to prove himself, but otherwise they're pretty good up in those positions.
And now they have Elgton Jenkins coming back to play right tackle. So that right side of the offensive line looks a whole lot better.
Yeah, you know, we need to talk about that a little bit too.
Right. LaFleur was asked today, does that shore up the left side of your line, the right side of your line? And he wasn't ready to commit to either side.
Tight end?
Well,
at this point, if Elgton Jenkins does not line up at tight end at least once this season, I will riot.
Elgton Jenkins said of all those spots, tight end would be the one he picked. I was like, you tell Robert Tunyon that? Yeah, he's like, oh, we'll have that talk.
I want to see a jumbo package on the goal line with Elgton Jenkins at tight end. Get us back to a series.
Well, we talked about it last week, and wherever Elgton Jenkins lines up, it's a huge bonus, and it strengthens the offensive line. It just doesn't matter where he lines up. So if Bakhtiari isn't ready for week one, Elgton Jenkins is the left tackle. If Bakhtiari is ready, Yash Nyman might beat the right tackle, and then Jenkins can play left or right guard. And you have pretty good five guys.
Are they better with Nyman, who is probably a better left tackle than right tackle, at left tackle and Elgton Jenkins at right tackle? Yash Nyman played a pretty solid left tackle.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think that's a decision they have to make. I just know that Elgton Jenkins is their best left tackle. But you're right. If Yash Nyman is good, and then you can put Elgton Jenkins on the right, you got two really good tackles. Yeah, maybe that's the way you roll.
A couple of just programming notes as well on special teams. They did cut Gabe, who I apologize. His last name, I never learned how to pronounce. Burkic. Yeah. There were like no vowels in that last name. Yeah.
I keep wanting to say Burkic, but it's Burkic. Yeah.
Matt LaFleur said he did tweak a hamstring during warmups on Friday, and then he missed his one field goal attempt.
Badly.
No offense to Gabe. He wasn't making 53. It
looked like one of my drives back when I played golf.
Yeah, this is why we didn't know he tweaked the hamstring, because he had been missing kicks in camp already. Yeah,
so.
And then brought in a new kicker today, Ramiz Ahmad, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Hit 5 of 6 in practice. Wasn't bad.
Yeah. Again, it's Mason Crosby's job, but he's still in.
Yeah, you got to have someone who's just in case.
Yeah.
Keep one on the practice squad. With the new 16,
that's not a bad idea. You gotta find someone. Especially eventually, Crosby's going to retire, so you might as well keep developing guys.
Yeah. I really thought that J.J. Molson had a chance to be that.
I did too.
There was an assistant coach out there that I swear is J.J. Molson, and I want to ask: Did y'all hire J.J. to stick around? I swear it's.
You should ask him for a Molson.
A Molson. I'm going to point him out to you tomorrow. I swear it's him.
He sure doesn't have to work for a living, but, you know, I did too. I thought he was really good in camp.
Wait, is that really his family's
deal? Yes. Oh. Heck yeah, it is. He's an heir. Last camp, I thought he was really good. Yeah. I was surprised they let
him
go.
Better than Gabe Burkic.
Maybe they bring him back. Who knows? Well, guys, like I said, we will be back out here on Monday, which I believe is when this episode is dropping, for a closed camp. And then Tuesday is when it gets exciting. The Saints come marching in. Over under on how far into practice we get before the first fight happens?
When the Jets were here, it wasn't too bad. I don't remember many fights, was there?
I think
Trevor Penning apparently is looking for these fights.
Though. I think and LaFleur. Their relationship really helped last year.
Yeah.
I think also Carl Lawson tearing his Achilles
that just put a dark cloud over the whole.
Because these guys can get chippy. There's going to be trash talking, but there is still an NFL community. When there's a serious injury to a guy that's respected like that, it puts a pall over practice.
There was some edge to the first one with the Texans when Jay Sternberger got that concussion.
Cheap shot.
Yeah, and then Bill O'Brien kicked him out of practice, right? The guy who did it. I forgot his name now.
I forget his name too, but I remember talking to someone with the Packers walking out to practice that day and said, Bill O'Brien did that for the betterment of both sides, to the betterment of practice, because it was going to bubble over. But that to me, if there's a cheap shot, that's when things get dicey. If there's a cheap shot either way, that, you know, and Matt LaFleur said today he hasn't addressed it with the team yet, but be tough whistle to whistle, not after the whistle.
Yeah, I don't think they have a lot of guys. I mean, how many fights have we seen in practice? One. And it wasn't really a fight, you know?
It was just a scuffle.
Yeah. Rashawn Gary kind of escalated it, but yeah, I don't know. It'll be fun to watch. I'll I'd love to see Rashawn Gary and Trevor Penning go at it. That would be something to see.
I thought for half a second we were going to have a fight today, and then I realized the guys were just pumped up and excited with Aaron Jones, of all people, versus Eric Stokes in the end zone. Aaron Jones, he like climbed the ladder, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
He went way up over Eric Stokes, and every single member of this team was in the end zone trying to fight their side, who if it was a touchdown or not. Mm-hmm.
It was an impressive play for a running back over a corner. Almost impressive enough to forget that there was like a multitude of sacks on that drive leading up to that moment.
Sacks don't exist in practice, Ryan. Don't you know
it? Not when Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. If Jordan loves the quarterback, those sacks count. Drive over.
I'm not talking about just one.
But Aaron Rodgers, he got sacked twice.
And I think our colleague Pete Doherty told us that the reason that they ended up going for two on the next play was because the defense got an excessive celebration flag.
Yeah, they had
to. The offense got the ball on the 7-yard line.
They needed two to go for a touch, to go for the win, but the ball started at the 7 and started at the 2 because they got excessive celebration. I've never seen that in a practice before.
It's about the funniest thing I've ever heard from a practice. That's pretty hilarious.
On the 2-point conversion try, Romeo Doubs caught it, but his feet were not.
He kept it way out. It wasn't close.
It actually kind of cracked me up, which I guess just says a lot about this team that they're having fun. But like, practice was over. They were in the huddle, like breaking down, and Alan Lazard and Rasul Douglas were still standing over there arguing on whether or not Romeo Doubs had called it or not.
Not close. That happened right in front of me. He was a good 18 inches out.
There's no way he had it.
They wanted a push, a flag front, and Rasul Douglas, but no.
Yeah, Alan Lazard and Rasul Douglas, they had a deep debate about it for quite a while. It was actually pretty funny. Like I said, New Orleans Saints will be in town on Tuesday. We will be out here to cover it for you all. That Tuesday and Wednesday practice is also open to the public before they take Thursday off and then face the Saints in their second preseason game on Friday night. We will be there to cover it for you all on PackersNews.com. For Tom and Ryan, I'm Cassidy. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.